on him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's not going to be like, oh, Rick Barnes fails
Yeah.
again. It's like, well, nobody really
Well, they were
expects them to.
six.
Yeah, right. I think you could also throw either Miami or Missouri. They play each other in the first
Yeah.
round, a 7-10 game. I think the winner of that one's got a shot against Purdue, and then it's like, I'm not scared of BYU. I'm not scared of Gonzaga. So, I like your Tennessee call there, and then I would also throw the winner of Miami and Missouri into that category.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Jason Munns joins the program. We'll get his thoughts on Ed Scott's comments from yesterday and what all it means for Tiger basketball. Stick around and listen to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jason Munns is the Tiger basketball beat writer for The Commercial Appeal. You can follow him on X, the Everything app, at Munsley. Munns, what are we listening to?
This is the, I know it's Wednesday, but these are the Happy Mondays, and this song is called Spot On.
All right, so I want to get to your thoughts on Ed Scott's interview that he did with Gary yesterday. In terms of what you thought was the most noteworthy thing that he said, what would you categorize as that?
I mean, it's tough because there was a lot of meat on the bone to choose from. Yesterday, I mean, it was a, obviously it was a lengthy interview. It was very in depth, and they touched on a lot of different things. I mean, I thought that, like him laying, Ed Scott laying out his, calculus basically for the decision that he made, I thought was really interesting. Like he talked about how he not only talked to Penny, but he also talked to obviously like the university administration and key stakeholders, but then he also leaned on people who had gone through, pseudo similar situations. Specifically, he mentioned former Louisville athletic director Tom Jurich and the former athletic director at Michigan and the current athletic director at Michigan, the current athletic director at
Soon to
Georgia
be
now.
former.
Okay, well, fair enough. But yeah, like these people had gone through situations with Juwan Howard at Michigan and Denny Crum at Louisville and Patrick Ewing and John Thompson III at Georgetown. And he, I mean, I thought that was pretty honestly, like good work, like good solid due diligence, and a good solid due diligence exercise to go and talk to people who have walked in those shoes before, having to make a decision on someone that's considered to be, different than just your average coach. And then also he leaned on people that mentors and things like that are close to him. And so I thought that was really interesting. And then obviously to me, one of the biggest takeaways was like, okay, we've gotten past that. Like we know, obviously we know you're bringing him back for a ninth season. Now we know how you did it, like how you arrived at that decision, but all right, what's next? Like, what can you tell us about what's next? Like, what do you want from, like specifically, what do you want from Penny Hardaway and from the Memphis basketball program? And so, he talked about his expectations, and not just his expectations, but also the expectations of everybody, kind of everybody who matters. And so, yeah, he talked about that and like how they're going to get there and things that he's going to do to help Penny Hardaway get there. There was a lot of really good quotes, but I thought one of the more illuminating ones was when he said that, like, in one of the conversations, one of the many conversations he had with Penny over the past month, he said that Penny said word for word, "I need help," and that was pretty enlightening, I thought. So yeah, there was a lot to choose from. Those are some of the highlights for me, though.
Yeah, Munz, it's funny you mentioned that. Also, great to speak with you, Jason. It's a true honor to converse with you. But
Holy cow. Way to spring this one on me, guys. Jeez.
well, Herd's on spring break, much deserved time off, and Cobb's gonna
Yeah.
kind of have a decently busy Thursday, so we moved him up, and DeMichael's gonna
Jeez.
be hanging out with us for 2 days.
Nice. Well, bring it on. Let's go.
Well, Jason, I will not mention our head-to-head ping pong record to the listeners. I won't do that to you. That would just be really inconsiderate. But I will ask you, because your takeaway there on Penny's humility and the I Need Help line was like my biggest takeaway too. And I view it from a positive light, like, hey, this is a successful person who's admitting, like, hey, I need help, and then accepting the things that can be placed around him to enhance what's a struggling program right now. I mean, but you could read that one of two ways. You could say, oh, no, if Penny says he needs help, like, this program's totally shot. But I didn't take it that way. I thought, oh, wow, the fact that he acknowledges that, I think, gives it a chance because he's willing to make the changes that mm-hmm. are necessary to push the program forward. So, like, when you hear Penny coming across as humble and needing help, like, what's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even consider, honestly, the – not that it's, like, not a valid way to interpret what he said, but, like, that didn't even cross my mind that when you hear someone or anyone, much less Penny Hardaway, saying, I need help, he's basically admitting that you know, he can't do the job. But I don't think – yeah, I didn't even consider that. Like, that to me, it's obvious that – nobody, including Penny Hardaway, nobody can do a job like this on their own. You do need help. Everybody needs help. And I think the part that was kind of so eyebrow raising about it was that the assumption for a lot of people over the years that since Penny Hardaway has been the head coach is that he has tried to do it by himself. And that's kind of what's gotten him into this position is that he hasn't really allowed anyone else to help him. And I wrote about this before Ed went on, spoke publicly with Gary Parrish the other day, that was one of the things. If he was going to get a ninth season, that was one of the top things moving forward that has to happen, that he has to not only, you know, surround himself with better people, but empower those people to, you know, allow them to help him. Because again, that's been one of the sort of perceptions about him is that he doesn't, that the people that he puts around him haven't necessarily been empowered, you know, totally to do what they need to do to help this program get where it should be. And so, yeah, that was the part that was like, oh, this is really, really interesting. If he is now willing to, you know, give the people the freedom, the autonomy to help him. Well, then Memphis might, like, if that does all work and it comes to pass, well, then Memphis may be cooking with something here pretty soon.
I think my question though is, I definitely thought there was one answer that we played that I think kind of touched on all this. And it was like, to me, like, that was the best answer because it was almost like a checklist of things the fans wanted to hear. And I'm not saying like that was the intention, but it was like it. I'm not saying it's going to make people any less frustrated, but at least it could at least give them the confidence that it's like, hey, not all your criticism's wrong. Like we understand right. there's some issues. I think my bigger question though is how hard is this going to be to execute? Because on the other hand, I could sit there and say Penny Hardaway was kind of put on the clock yesterday. I mean, you know what I mean? And so now you're basically coming up with a new staff, you're going to be hiring a GM. Like, I can just see where under these circumstances, like, that's going to be easier said than done.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Like, it is not going to be, it's not going, relatively speaking, it's not going to be easy because here we are, whatever, dated at March 18th, and you know, like, at least publicly, there are a bunch of positions on his staff that are open and there are a bunch of positions, like there are a bunch of roster spots that are open. And you know, like whether there's stuff happen, I mean, obviously there is, like there are things happening behind the scenes on both fronts, but still, like, it's March 18th and we're talking about having to do some like pretty serious heavy lifting with not a ton of runway. And so I do think that is a legitimate concern.
Well, and I think I would also add, a coach that doesn't exactly have a deep Rolodex within college basketball.
Yeah, yeah, no, but I think that's part of where, you know, allowing other people to help, like allowing Tim Duncan to help, the deputy athletic director, who's also over, he's the sport administrator for men's basketball, allowing Ed Scott to help, allowing these people to, you know, like support you to use their Rolodexes, Rolodices. I don't know what the Rolodice. Yeah. We'll Google that later. But
yeah, I think you're right, because it'd be indexes.
Indices, yeah.
Yeah, Rolodexes.
but anyway, yeah, it does seem like this is not going to be the easiest thing in the world to pull off. But I mean, that's where, you know, you gotta put your trust and your faith in the people who are in place to do their jobs. And you know, like at that point, whether it works or not, like nobody knows. But this is the decision that they have arrived at. And yeah, I mean, that was the other thing about Ed's interview yesterday, you know, where he talked about how there was so much interesting about it, but you know, how he talked about how you know, he took into account Penny's record versus power conference team.
Yeah.
And the progress that Penny showed early, like in the first half of his tenure. The fact that if you did just remove this past season, they had made the NCAA tournament 3 out of 4 years and won 2 out of 3 American Conference tournament championships. Like it was really, really interesting. And then the other thing that I thought was super interesting was, you know, when Gary asked him basically, you know, like point blank, he was like, is this a situation where if you do not make the NCAA tournament, you will not be the coach for a 10th season? And, you know, Ed basically said, like, look, that is the expectation. The expectation is for you to get to the NCAA tournament. Now, is there some
wiggle room? I think is what he said. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, is there some wiggle room? Well, yes. Like I don't think Ed like came out and explicitly said, yes, there is wiggle room, but he said, yes, there is wiggle room. Like, you know, it's not NCAA tournament or else. It's going to be interesting. How this all plays out for sure.
So what's your take on the schedule that Memphis is already putting together for next year? Because there's a part of you that is almost like, wow, given the changes this program is going to be undergoing and given the stakes here, you almost wonder if they wouldn't go a little softer, but they're not. And Penny's never run from a challenge in terms of the schedule. And you have a better understanding than I do of how many they've already added to this slate. I mean, it looks like it's going to be just as daunting as the ones they've played here the last few seasons.
I know. And that is a legitimate concern as well, because, you know, and this is no secret, like a lot of people have talked about this, but a lot of coaches don't schedule that way because losing takes a toll on you. Like if you don't win, and like, if you go through your non-conference schedule the way Memphis went through its non-conference, like I think that is a factor that not a lot of attention got paid to about the direction this season ultimately went. Like, I think that losing, number one, going 4-7 or whatever it was, 4-8 or 5-7, I think it was, before they got into conference play, they were 5-7. I think, number one, losing, like going under 500 during that stretch, but then also like losing close games, like, you know, losing, you know, kind of obviously the heartbreaker against Wake Forest. And then you had the 2-possession game down in Oxford against Ole Miss. You had the game against Mississippi State that was, you know, tight for the most part, and Memphis ended up falling short in that game. And then the Vanderbilt game that went into overtime at FedEx Forum. Like, these were tough losses. Like, these weren't just, you know, they rolled the ball out there and they got blown out every single game. Like, these were tough losses. And that, I think, did play a big part in the direction the season ultimately went. And so it does make – it should make people very nervous about next season, because – so there are you have 13 non-conference games. They've announced seven. And they're doozies. Like, you got Texas on the road, you've got Baylor on the road, you've got Louisville coming in here, you've got Utah State coming in here, you've got Iowa State to open the season on a neutral floor, you've got Dayton on a neutral floor. There's one I'm leaving out, but and there's going to be more. There will be at least one more power conference team added, and I think potentially more than that. And so yes, like it amplifies the need to go through that gauntlet in somewhat decent shape, or else things could snowball like they did this year. And then, of course, we know what would happen if next season goes the direction this season went.
We're talking with Jason Munns, Commercial Appeal, Tiger basketball beat writer. Along the same lines, I was thinking about, because this is a topic that you and I have discussed, and I'm thinking about Penny's press conference after the Tulane game, and I believe it might have been Infield that asked him about, you know, the roster turnover. And on the one hand, I could see where Penny's answer was, hey, like, we've already kind of established we're bringing in a GM. I don't want to make it look like I'm setting, hey, you got to bring this guy back. You don't, like, I want him to have the open book, if you will, to bring everyone back. But his answer did specify, he's like, you know, last year, which was a great season, we had 14 new guys. This year wasn't a good season. But it was almost along the lines of, like, he would be totally fine bringing in 14 new guys next year. Did you take it that way? Because it almost was a little bit surprising based on the schedule, because I kind of felt like when you looked at the Tigers' non-conference schedule, they were kind of tipping their hand that, like, hey, we know we're going to need to bring these guys back, or bring a good chunk of these guys back.
Yeah, I mean, I did not read it that way. I have thought for a while that Penny, somewhere along the way, Penny realized that, like, he can't keep going the way that he's been going. Like, yes, it worked. It worked when they only brought Nick Jordan back. They went 29-6 and got a 5 seed and all that stuff. Won the league and won the conference tournament. Like, it worked. But, like, somewhere at some point, whether it was last off season, like, as they were approaching the season, or during this past season, somewhere along the way, he realized this is not sustainable. You can get away with it. You can get away with it here and there, which is exactly what happened in the two seasons ago. But when you start stacking off seasons where you're only bringing back one or two or none, like they did this year, like, you have player retention has to be an emphasis to some degree. Now, I'm not saying you need, like, they have eight guys who have eligibility remaining. Nobody's out here saying that they got to bring all eight of them back.
Right.
But I do believe that Penny came to the conclusion somewhere along the way in the last calendar year that there's no other option. You have to bring at least some people back in order to avoid a lot of the pitfalls that come along with zero carryover or very minimal carryover. So that's how I didn't take his comments to mean that he was, you know, thinking about, or that he would be fine with another completely new roster. I think very much that we are going to see more players retained this, you know, from this past roster to the next one than we have in the past three seasons combined. Like, the past three off seasons combined, Penny has only retained three total players. Three. That's Malcolm Dandridge, Jaden Hardaway, and Nick Jordan. I think we're going to see more than that just this off season alone.
What did you make of the anecdote from Ed about PJ Haggerty? And, you know, Ed singled out, hey, PJ never countered with us. And it was, I believe, in support of his point of, I've told Penny he's got to make decisions faster.
Yeah. That's kind of been my thought. The fact that PJ didn't counter, I thought that was kind of the thing all along, from Ed's perspective and Penny's perspective, PJ nor his camp really ever gave Penny a shot to, or Memphis a shot to stay in the race, as it were. I thought that was interesting for him to reiterate that. I forgot what was the second part of the question.
Well, I guess what did you make of his including that anecdote? Because, you know, this is a topic that I feel like I've kind of been on an island for a while, which was like, I thought I understood why everyone's like, well, they waited on PJ Haggerty. What do you want him to do? It's like, I just never thought that was that realistic.
Yeah. No, I mean, obviously there's a bunch of stuff that, like a bunch of guardrails and things like that. And stuff that Ed is very much placing an emphasis on Penny, and the program moving forward. And so, I think that's probably one of the bigger ones. One of the more important ones, if you ask me, is that Penny has to act quicker. There has to be more of a sense of urgency. There has to be more of a plan going into every single day, like, of the week. There has to be a plan, like, and there has to be a backup plan, and there probably should be a plan C for every single day of the week. And, like, you can't continue to conduct real, like, impactful business in August and September and even October. You cannot continue to pin your hopes to players' eligibility cases. Like, that, like this past offseason, it was Dane Danger. The offseason before was David Jones and Caleb Mills. And I want to say the offseason before was DeAndre Williams, and I'm starting to get fuzzy because they all start to run together. But I think that bringing that up was a very intentional thing on Ed's part, because I think that is one of his more one of the points that he's been trying to hammer home to Penny for however long they've been discussing this.
All right, one last
Jason. I need to get your champion. I don't know if you're on the first off, one, do you see South Florida beating Louisville? I need to know if your American champion advances in the bracket. And second of all, who's winning it all?
The answer is yes. I picked South Florida to beat Louisville. And I say I'm even more confident in that with Mikel Brown Jr. not playing. And the fact that it's in Buffalo, right?
Yes.
Isn't that where Hodgson is from?
It is indeed. His dad has Alzheimer's, and I think he may have been like given up for adoption. It's like, it's the first actual game. Like his dad lives up there. It's like his first game. Like, that's the emotional stories, that it'll be the first game his dad will be in the building for him.
Yeah. So all of that, plus the fact that South Florida is really good. I think South Florida, and that's probably my biggest upset of the entire bracket. Sadly, I hate to disappoint you, David, but that is probably my biggest upset of the entire bracket. And then I picked Iowa State to win it all.
All right, last question before we let you go. What position do you think would get filled first if you had to bet today?
Associate head coach.
That was interesting that he seemed like they were pretty far down the road on that.
That one's been very far down the road for a while. So not sure where they are in terms of, like, an announcement, although I do think that's close too. I think that one is closer than any other one.
All right, my man, we appreciate you.
All right, see y'all. Bye, Cobb.
That is Bye. Jason Munns, Tiger basketball beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to discuss a little coaching carousel because we had with Hodgkin, we got Hodgkin?
That's a form of cancer. You're thinking of
Hodgkin's lymphoma. Yeah, but like, Hodgson, right?
Brian Hodgson, yeah.
Hodgson. Okay, I'm sure I nailed it there. All right, we got Syracuse news, but we also have coaching carousel news, and I want to discuss that with Cobb because I think there's been some interesting developments that I want to bring up with him and get his thoughts. We'll discuss that next right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Cobb. Yesterday evening, because I want to say it was after the show, I believe Jeff Goodman of Field of 68 put the news on X, the Everything app, it's all happening on X, that Brian Hodgson would not be taking the Syracuse job, and it appears now his two options would be either Providence or staying at USF, and it appears USF is making all the necessary moves to try and make a competitive offer to keep him. I was thinking about it, though, in these terms. He's obviously a rising star in coaching and certainly one of the hottest mid-major names. I was a little thrown off the scent there because I know he's got ties to Buffalo and upstate New York. I've also wondered, though, is Syracuse just kind of doing the song and dance to make it seem like they're not just hiring Jerry McNamara?
Maybe, but it could also tell you about what the perception is of the Syracuse job right now. If Brian Hodgson is outright telling Syracuse, who many would put in that category as like a fringe blue blood, if he's just telling them no outright, like, I don't think that I wouldn't want that narrative out there if I'm Syracuse, like the, oh, we courted him or whatever, or maybe if I'm Syracuse and I'm trying to control the narrative, it's like, oh, we're going in a different direction, right? Like, don't let Hodgson be the one to say I'm going in a different direction, because then it makes it look like he turned you down. You need to be like, oh, we're moving on to other candidates, right? Like, Syracuse, I don't know what the circumstances is, but they aren't winning that narrative battle right now. And I think it suggests, like, the perception of the job is they're broke.
Yeah, and I guess I should, like, to be fair, I felt like that was definitely coming from Hodgson's camp. If you would have said, like, just because your search feels like at times that it's a cluster, it doesn't mean that it has to be. Like, for instance, think about how we felt about the Penn State search with what? A week, maybe 2 weeks before the end of the season? They wind
right.
up hiring.
And then it turned out Matt right. Campbell just wasn't answering the phone because he thought it was a spam call. Right.
Right. And so had I told you when they fired James Franklin that Penn State's going to hire Matt Campbell, you would have gone, okay, like, that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, good, solid hire. Like, no idea if it's going to work, but it's a hire that makes sense, if you will. But the way that their whole search went about, it felt like it was rudderless. But I was kind of in the camp of, I do agree with you, I don't think it was leaked from Syracuse. I would also be curious to know, like, was that candidate 1A for Syracuse?
He's a native son who's having a lot of success, you would have to think. Now, I do think Jerry McNamara would actually help solve some of their fundraising issues. That's the way to ignite the fan base. I know people are going to say, well, Red Autry was a Syracuse guy. Yeah, but, like, did he just lead Siena to the NCAA tournament? Does everybody have iconic memories from their childhood of Red Autry hitting, you know, game-winning shots in the postseason? I mean,
I would also argue this. By the end of the Boeheim era, everybody was kind of done with it, and Autry felt like a continuation. This feels it's not just, even though he played for Boeheim, and clearly that's going to be like one of the most influential guys, it doesn't necessarily feel like another handpicked successor, because as you and I have talked about, like, I think there's becoming a public apprehension about the old handpicked successor.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's what Red Autry was. McNamara would differentiate himself from that because he's been elsewhere now, had success as a head coach. He was a part of a more successful era as a player than Red Autry was. So I don't know. I think that's the direction they end up going. But it depends. Like, you could talk me into the other side of it. Some coach out there being like, oh, I don't care what the NIL budget is. The Syracuse job is the Syracuse job, and I'll get it going, and I'll go raise the money, right? Like, you could talk me into, you know, some other old school sort of mentality coaches out there still viewing it as a top 15 job. I think in terms of tradition, I think in terms of like dormant potential, like it is still that. It's, I mean, look at the success they've had over decades under Jim Boeheim. But if you're just looking at it straight off of current investment, I don't blame Hodgson at all for saying thanks, but no thanks, because I think Providence is more motivated right now to spend and invest and do what it takes to win. And then, hey, look, maybe the coming back to USF thing is a real possibility, because he might look at the American and be like, geez, that was easy. Like, I could just stay here and run this thing. Like, I ain't scared of Penny Hardaway. You know what I mean? Like, why would he be after how easy it was for
I think he's
South Florida?
3-0 against him.
Yeah. And so his first year, he just dominates the conference. Well, next
year. How long was he at ASU?
Yeah, I think only 1 year.
Yeah. I think he's 3-0 against him.
He was at Arkansas State for 2 seasons. But that's the other thing too. It's like, that's just sounds exhausting. Like 2 years in Jonesboro, 1 year in Tampa, then go to Syracuse, New York. I mean, I'm not saying that's a reason not to do it. I'm just saying, like, if you've got, he's got kids, he's got a wife, right? So
yeah.
I don't know. It just sounds tiring.
So Arkansas State only played, in his 2 years at Arkansas State, they only played Memphis once. Yeah, he's 3-0 against him.
Yeah, dude can flat out coach. The thing about South Florida too is like, yeah, Brian Hodgson comes from the Nate Oates tree, but they play defense too. That's another reason why I think they got a chance to beat Louisville. But boy, it'd be great for Memphis if Brian Hodgson took the Providence job, because nobody's going to be chomping at the bit to go to South Florida. I don't know who that Hodgson level hire is to make. I thought Hodgson should have been in the mix for a high major job last year after the job he did at Arkansas State. But we know these ADs get so caught up in, well, did you make the NCAA tournament? That's a horrible barometer to use to evaluate whether a coach is good or not at the low and mid-major level. You could do a program like Memphis's level or above. Yeah, absolutely. You got to judge a coach on whether they make the big dance, because they have a legitimate path and there's no excuse. But if you're in the Sun Belt, Conference USA, any of these low major one-bid leagues, I mean, that should not be the judgment on your ability as a coach. But for a guy like Hodgson, it was. And so, therefore, South Florida was the best job that he could go to. And, gee, what do you know? Like, he's done an amazing job there. So it's no surprise to see him getting trotted about in this cycle.
Obviously, with the NCAA tournament going on, maybe some of this is more hush-hush. But is it obvious to you that there's a clear, like, best job available?
No, this cycle has been weaker than I thought it would be. I thought there would be more movement. We might get more still.
I think there's a lot of people making decisions like Memphis did.
Yeah, it's the budgetary restrictions are far more restrictive than they were 5 years ago.
Well, because you're always going to run into this question of, it seems like the guys that have gotten fired were kind of the no doubters. You know what I mean? But
we knew they were coming a mile away, but a lot of guys who were in the maybe category have
correct,
not been fired yet.
Because inevitably you're going to have this discussion with your boosters, which is, guys, we can take all this money and fire him and then go get another coach, or we could take some of this money, put it into the roster and see.
Right.
Now, it doesn't always work out. Like, it seems to me that that's what Arizona State did, and, you know, they're going to be looking for a new coach. It's clearly what Kansas State did. They're looking for a new coach. Like,
but they had, like, Arizona State had already run it back, you know, with Bobby Hurley. And some of these schools, like, all right, we already gave you your second chance. Like, and that's the boat Penny will be in this time next year if the results are substandard. And unless, you know, because the other thing too now is it's harder as a coach though to say, well, look at this recruiting class I got coming in. Like, that's not even a thing anymore. Like, you don't even know what your recruiting class is, if you even have one, in terms of high school players. And that used to be a saving grace. Well, he had a bad year, but look at the class, you know, and we don't want to mess with the class. Well, you don't really have that to fall back on anymore, but it's all about what you get done in the portal. And I just think, now more so than ever, you got to have a visionary sort of personnel leader who can put the pieces together for you from a roster construction standpoint. And it's not just the counting stats. It's the Nick Jordans of the world. It's the Colby Rogers of the world. It's even like a Musa Cisse. Like, was he an elite player? No, but he filled a specific skill need in terms of rim protection. Colby Rogers, not an All-American, a specific skill need in terms of perimeter shooting, right? And so the counting stats are great, points per game, assists per game, steals per game, but you need guys who can fill specific roles and have that diversity within your roster. And if you're struggling as a program, you can do what Memphis is doing, and you can pivot in a direction towards a GM and somebody who can help you find that.
Well, like, the other thing that I was kind of thinking about is, do you put any stock into, I want to say maybe Mark told me this rumor that, so Charlotte fired Austin Fern like on Saturday, or was it Sunday?
Right. Yeah, it was within the last 72 hours, yeah.
And I'm not saying like Austin Fern had done like the world's most amazing job, but I think most people looked at Charlotte this year and thought they were better than maybe had been anticipated. But are you putting any stock into, after Tulane fired Ron Hunter, that was motivating Charlotte?
Yeah, I don't know what was behind that, because he didn't get a super long leash. He got 3 years, which is kind of the minimum now for a program that I feel like is performing at an adequate level. I mean, they were 500 in the American this year. For these programs that don't invest anything, like, what do you really expect? So that, sometimes you wonder what's really going on behind the scenes. It's not always just performance related. Like, sometimes these guys butt heads with the administration.
Well,
you know, sometimes they piss off the boosters, right?
And Charlotte also, I feel like they've had pretty quick triggers.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason Ron Sanchez went back to UVA, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on there. That athletic department is not in a really stable place. So the American just remains in total upheaval. It is such a bad conference, and it is so gettable that, again, there's just no excuse.
And
there's
no excuse. It ain't getting better.
It's not, especially if Hodgson takes Providence.
Yeah, I guess that's like the other thing. It's like, I can see where some of these jobs, like, you can talk yourself into it, but it makes sense to me, like, why, you know, we got Shirt staying at SLU. Like, I don't know if there's one that I'm like, man, I want to go hitch my wagon to this. Because to your point about, like, the whole weird aspect of ADs being like, well, did you go to the NCAA tournament from a one-bid league? It's like, well, that's kind of like, maybe we should look at a deeper body of work. But the way it oftentimes works is, like, you get one shot at, like, the big job.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Nolan Smith, so his career is on rocket fuel, right? Like, he was already well regarded before Tennessee State won the OVC title. Well, now he gets to the big dance, so he's like, oh, antennas are up around Nolan Smith. Well, what if, right, that one victory over Iowa State in the NCAA tournament, what if that happens? Right now, all of a sudden, he's on rocket fuel. It might have been a 1 in 100 roll of the dice, Iowa State cold shooting day, whatever. But oh my gosh, he's the best coach ever.
Sure,
right? Like, we get so caught up in like one game can change a coach's entire career. It's just kind of wild the way that works, because in college basketball, you have a 30-plus game sample size, a 30-plus game body of work with numbers that you can look into that go well beyond. Okay, how did you do in the roulette of a single game tournament? And to me, it's just like lazy administrative work when you cast your lot with whoever gets hot in March. Do I think Nolan Smith is any less of a coach if Tennessee State loses by 25 tomorrow? No, not at all. But of course, if they somehow were to pull the upset, like, oh my, like, he'll be on Good Morning America, and then all of a sudden, like, he'll be in the mix for whatever the next best job is that comes open.
If you're South Florida and Hodgson leaves, right, like, you got to go sniff around there.
I think you got to have another rung on the ladder from like an OVC before you start talking about high major, right? Like, Hodgson, you know, maybe from the Sun Belt, maybe you could justify it from the OVC. It's that's a big, big jump, you know, and we saw some coaches do it from like Murray State back when Murray State was humming.
Well, like you look at it, like Jay Lucas is doing well at Miami. Like I get it. Jay's not going to be the only head coach that wins at Miami, but like that's another guy from kind of like the similar trees and doing it in South Florida.
Yeah, he is. It's crazy, right? Because Nolan Smith, it was awkward to a certain extent that when Coach K retired, he handpicked John Shire. Shire and Nolan Smith were from that same generation of the brotherhood, right? So I understand kind of why it made sense for everybody for him to sort of go blaze his own trail. But he was at Louisville, he was at Memphis. And then, I mean, it's hard sometimes. You got to bet on yourself to take these lower tier jobs. Like you really do, because you might make more as an assistant with the bigger program. You might have similar type of job security. But if you want to get your foot on the ladder and have a chance to climb, like at some point you got to say, all right, well, I'm just going to go run my own program. And I think it's smart. I think it's smart to go to a lower tier job, because if you mess up at the lower tier job, like
it's not as profile.
Yeah. And you're probably going to get a little more patience. Like I look at Kenneth Blakeney, who's now been to three of the last four NCAA tournaments with Howard. That's a name to watch, right? He played for Duke. He's turned that program around, and he had some amazing, amazing quotes in his press conference last night about learning how to build culture. If I'm an AD, that's the sort of stuff that puts my antenna up, because if you can build culture and be successful with a zero budget program, like what are you going to do if I give you a little bit of money? That's, you know, something I would look at here is like the coaches who are having success, even at the lower rungs, like, yeah, they might need that one more. They might need that American job or that A-10 job before they get the big time job. But you know, if you dig in deep enough there, you can find some gems in the rough.
All right, buddy, we'll let you go. Good luck this weekend, man.
Appreciate it.
That is David Cobb. When we come back, we tell your story next, right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, George, for today's Don't Tell These Story, tell your story. This might be the man that invented never let your facts get in the way of a take. Our boy Francesa, did you see yesterday?
Oh, Lord, which one was this?
Francesa yesterday did about a 40-minute, or there's a nice like 40-second clip going around telling us that Zubi Ejiofor transferred from Kansas to St. John's because he didn't want to sit by Joel Embiid any longer. As Back After This notified us, Embiid's last game with Kansas was in March 2014 when Zubi was 9 years old.
That's a winner. That's a winner right there.
Mike, never in the history of the world has ever let a fact get in the way of a take.
Not once.
I want to thank David Cobb and Jason Munz for joining the program today. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.